why is it then that some people go get so attached to one thing? And what about the impact that might have on other family members? Linda Parnham is a clinical psychologist for Wiltshire Psychology Service and joins us now. It seems like quite a basic question, Linda, but why do some people collect things to this degree?
Well, I think if we initially look at what we might call happy collectors, there's about half a dozen reasons why people might collect things. So with happy collectors, it may be about loyalty. So, for example, if they collect football club memorabilia, they're showing their loyalty to that club. There can be a lot of pride in collecting, you know, if we're collecting stamps or rare things. There can be comfort in having collections. It can help us feel in control of life when it can feel a little bit out of control. It's also, as Jack and his wife were alluding to, it's a lovely way to access and keep bits of the past. And it's a lovely way to connect with people and increase our social circle at times as well.
Because, I suppose they go to collectors' events and meet other like-minded people.
Absolutely, yes. And also people will know them. You know, it's part of their identity that they do that, and people will be interested in them for that.
Are some people more prone to collecting than others?
A good question. I think where we've got happy collectors, I don't think there's necessarily a proneness to that. I think sometimes when we have more what we might call unhappy collectors, there can be a proneness. So if people have had a loss in early life, or if there's a sadness in their life, sometimes collecting can be a real source of comfort. So we sometimes see a little bit of proneness there.
Interesting that you're separating the happy collector from the unhappy collector. At what point does collecting become unhealthy?
Essentially, happy collecting is when it's really life enriching. It's something that you know, it does make us happy, it improves our life. With unhappy collecting, sometimes that can be when it's driven by sadness or grief, or we're trying to fill some sort of emotional void. So actually it doesn't really improve things much. It feels like it does for a little while, but things don't really get any better. Or otherwise, if we've got what we call obsessional collectors, which is where they just continue to collect things, even though they're perhaps investing too much time or too much money or too many resources to the exclusion of the rest of their life, and the rest of their life starts to fall away because they're so caught up with their obsessional collecting.
I would imagine that can impact on the people around them as well.
Absolutely. Family members can get upset and resentful, particularly if they're starting to accrue debt or it's taking up too much of the house. Absolutely.
It's interesting how they start. Take a listen to this. Margaret called us from Sherston a little earlier in the programme and told me about collecting salt and pepper parts. She collected bells for a while, matchboxes, but one of her biggest collections was Laurel and Hardy figures.
Well, I didn't mean to. It just one day I saw one when we went to a boot sale, and they were sat in a black car.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that's different. I haven't seen anything like that. And I bought that.
Can you remember what you paid for it?
Oh, about £1, I think.
It's quite an investment.
Yeah, and then every time I went to a boot sale, I just happened to think, oh, I wonder if there's any more about them. Everywhere I went then, I looked for them, and then I got them for presents, and I ended up with a shelves full.
This is what happens. Once people realise you have a thing, they...
Yeah.
Because it gets people out of a hole, doesn't it? When it's time to buy someone a birthday or a Christmas present, you always kind of rack your brains. But if you know they collect a thing, it helps people out. So how many did you end up with? I mean, what size of collection are we talking about?
I ended up with about 45 to 50.
Quite quickly, then, it escalates. I wonder how common it is, Linda, for something to start as innocuously as one item from a car boot sale, and then suddenly your house is full of them.
I think it can happen, as you say, when people realise, oh, you collect that particular thing, then they will associate it with you, and they will start to add to your collection, whether you want it to or not, sometimes, I think.
What's going on in our brains that makes collecting a specific thing different from hoarding, where you basically just want more and more and more, even if you're duplicating?
We're looking at happy collecting. It's something that is life enriching. It's something that brings us some real pride and pleasure. When we're talking about hoarding, that's quite different. So it's much more of a clinical problem, and it's not a happy state. It's often quite chaotic. You can't live comfortably anymore. Often there's sort of anxiety and fear that lives behind hoarding. So it's driven by negative reasons rather than by being positive and happy and excited about what we're finding.
Can you fix that?
You can. So often people are quite secretive and shameful, and it's hard for them to tell people that they're starting to hoard and they're struggling with that. But when we're looking at therapy for hoarding difficulties, we're trying to get on top of this idea that you don't have possessions anymore, your possessions have you. So when we look at therapy, we look at the stopping buying things and helping with good decision making to look at, you know, what do you need and what do you not need, and then help them manage their anxiety to start to get rid of things again.
Linda, thank you very much. Do you collect anything?
My husband would tell you I collect shoes, probably, but we can argue over that one.
Thank you very much indeed for
your
time.
You're really welcome.
Linda Parnham, clinical psychologist for Wiltshire Psychology Service.